and point those searchlights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Good morning, I'm Herb, and every week at this time at 10 o'clock every Friday, I introduce Community Spotlight. This one's a little bit different. Normally I pick people from the community who have contributed over many years thus far, but today we have a bit different. Today, shining the spotlight on two motorbike riders, Bea and Helmut. Good morning, Bea and Helmut.
Good morning, Herb. Good morning to all the listeners.
Good morning, Herb.
Well, thanks for coming in. Bea, I actually met at Aldi on the weekend, and she was riding a Kreidler 50cc two-stroke Floret motorcycle with lots of carry bags, and I had seen that she and her partner, Helmut, doing a tour around Australia. So a bit of adventure. Tell me about the motorbike first. Who'd like to go first?
Well, the bikes are a 69 Kreidler Floret and a 75 model. So we have two bikes. Both are 50cc two-stroke, pretty basic. You have to premix them. Back then, they were meant to do 40 kilometers an hour, 2.9 horsepower. You have to premix the fuel as well. We modified them for the trip. Bits and pieces you can still get for them. We rebuilt them as well completely. And, well, now we travel.
So I just read off Google, from 67 to 81, there was 125,000 of these Florets. And Kornwestheim in Germany was where the factory was. They didn't come into Australia. They didn't go sort of outside that Europe area. Whereabouts where they sold the Kreidler?
Pretty much West Germany. As you know, Germany was separated back then, and they've been a West German brand. They made it a bit into Switzerland, as far as I know, a bit into Austria, into the Netherlands, but that's pretty much it.
So what sort of other CCs did Kreidler make?
Later on, I think it was in the 80s, they made 80cc. They wanted to expand their market, but actually it was already too late. They got broke.
So the other thing I saw, that Kreidler won 8 50cc World Championship titles from 1970 to 1980. So what speeds would they be flying at?
Well, they put a lot of effort into racing, and that's how they advertised their bikes as well. And they got the world record. I'm not sure if they still got it, with 210 on a 50cc bike back then on some salt flats.
Oh, my God. On a 50cc, be just like riding a push bike at that speed. Now, Bea, I might just ask you about your first experience on motorbikes. This is before this Kreidler obsession happened. So where was your first experience on motorbikes?
Well, I made my license back when I was 18, but I haven't ridden a bike for over 10 years afterwards. And it was when Helmut and I met, about 10 years ago.
15 years ago.
Yes, 15 years ago.
It is Valentine's Day today, you know. Yeah. So somebody's got to get this right.
I missed it already.
And he was a lot into motorcycles. And, well, back then I started a little bit riding bikes again. And then we came up with the idea of exploring the world on motorcycles. So I had to train. I had to get back on the bike. And,
So that's led into the 2011 world trip. What was that about?
Well, I started riding the bike 1 year before we started the trip. I really went into motorcycle riding. It was a bit tough. But it was an awesome trip. We planned to be on the road for 2 years. And in the end, it was over 5 years. We went all through Eastern Europe, Southeast Asia. We've been to Australia back then for 1.5 years, explored the country, really fell in love with the people, with the landscape, with the animals, with everything. Afterwards, we continued to New Zealand, South America, North America. So it really was the trip of a lifetime.
So what sort of bikes did you take on the world trip?
Back then, we had two Honda Transalps, also quite old.
600cc V-twins, 30 years old roughly.
Well, at least you didn't have to mix your fuel.
No, well, it was, I wouldn't say it was easy, it was different to travel then with these bikes.
So let's go back to where you both come from.
Where we live, southeast of Munich, right on the Austrian border, a small town called Burghausen. We have the longest castle in the world.
The different seasons in Australia, we're virtually summer the whole time in comparison to Europe. What's the winters like where you come from?
Well, we have not really cold winters. We are close to the Alps, actually. Yeah. It's like we can have snow and we have like -5, -10 degrees in the winter time. So we usually don't ride between autumn to spring, especially because they put a lot of salt on the roads and that kills pretty much everything, makes it rust, and therefore we keep the bikes in the shed.
So I have been on the internet there where the English and in a lot of American areas and where the bikes are put away for their winter sleep, and the people just keep saying, oh, it's only a 1 week before we can start riding, or 2 weeks or something. So it's a bit of an on and off passion or pastime in those countries.
It is, yeah. Well, it makes it good. It's like spring. You're really looking forward to a new season. But then again, when you put it away, well, that's mostly the time to maintain and fix something or customize things. And it's a great time as well.
Better off fixing it up during the winter than having it breaking down on the road like many of us experienced in Australia. But we're going to get around to breaking down. Now, tell me about this trip. So you came here in 2011. You've been here in Armidale for only a week, but you came in August of last year. Where did you go? Where did you come into Australia, and how did you get the bikes across? And then where did you go, Bea?
Well, we shipped the bikes to Australia, to Brisbane last year in August, and we flew here. And then we went up all the way to Cape York. So we've been to the northernmost point of the Australian mainland. We tackled the old teletrack, did some really tough stuff up there. And the original plan was to go west from there. But because the wet season was just to start, we decided to change our route, turn around and heading south. And this is why, we ended up in Armidale now, on our further way south.
So your house sitting here, you've been here a week, and you're here for how long?
We are here for roughly 3 weeks.
And then where are we going?
Sydney area. We take some backcountry routes and explore Blue Mountains and some mountainous areas of...
Well, there's a lot of distance between here and Sydney, and you've got a lot of options, whether you actually go down the coast. There's some sort of back roads down the coast, but there's a lot of inland roads. The long way around, I suppose, to get to Sydney. It all depends what you're after. Now, tell me, Bear, there's a Instagram, a YouTube, and a blog that you've created. What's that called?
Yeah, it's called Time to Ride. And if you write it all together, you will find it like literally everywhere, Facebook, YouTube, like I said, Instagram. And where we started our blog back in 2011 with the motorcycle world trip, and now with our new 50cc moped adventure, we also do like a documentary on YouTube. So we really film a lot every day about the adventure, about the bikes, about the people we met, the landscape, the challenges, everything. And I think we filmed 20 episodes already and try to publish them as we go. We've released two already, but there's a lot more to come.
You just mentioned, Bea, about the people that you meet. Tell me about some of the special instances that you've had, whether it's just recently in your Cape York or whether it was the world trip. Tell me about anything that really sticks in your mind as something special.
Well, it was really interesting because you meet so many different people, because the good thing with the motorcycle is it doesn't matter if you're rich or not so rich, everyone is more or less the same. And so we got invited also during our world travel to people that seem to be, at least regarding to our Western standard, to be poorer people, but they've been super happy, super friendly. We enjoyed the time a lot with them. Like in Russia, we've been invited. They heated up their banya. It's like a sauna, so we had a bath there. Some of the moms, they really cried the next day because they were worried for us traveling in such a remote country. Or in Indonesia, we got picked up in Mongolia, into a yurt. And also in Australia, it was incredible. Also back in 2011, in 2012 already. Every day I went into the supermarket to do my shopping, and Helmut waited outside with the bikes. And when they came back, someone invited us.
Had an invitation just recently, actually, on the way down, we met, for example, a guy who has the world record in the most horses in front of a coach, like 24 horses, and the whole thing was like 250 meters long, and he got to talk to us, and then we integrated him into our show and talked about him, his life. He's building now a 14-ton coach, which was a Cobb & Co. coach back then, a replica. So you meet people or just recently the biker who does the blue bike thing. You may have heard about it. It's about mental health. And with the blue thing, they build bikes, they paint it blue, and they put it along the road on famous bike routes. And they want to make bikers aware that there is someone out there. If you need help, get to the community or get to a professional.
So tell me, is that a project that's up and running at the moment, or is it something that's in the wind, that blue bike?
Right now they built these bikes, and they have even a Facebook page.
So the Blue Bike Project. So maybe if you just type in the Blue Bike Project, you might find some more details on that. I'll just go back to Bia. Time to Ride. Now, you said something that was quite interesting off air, that it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, but you've also come across people who don't think that they can do a big adventure. But I think this event with your little Kreidler 50cc is debunking that idea.
Yes, exactly. Due to our world trip, the blog became quite famous back in Germany, and a lot of people, especially younger people, wrote us that they would like to do a similar travel, but they can't afford it. They have to buy a very expensive bike first and then all the accessories. And this trend goes on and on. And I think in Australia, it's pretty similar. So we decided, okay, we would like to show that you don't need the fanciest equipment. Just take whatever you have, go out and have an adventure. And this is where you came up with the idea of this very old, very simple bikes. And now we're here, well, to find out what they're capable of. And yeah, to just have the adventure of our life.
So I think the problem might be that in our consumer society, people are making bikes, but then they accessorize them. There is so much on the market. There is so many accessories, and people think, oh, I've got to have all these accessories. Mm-hmm. But you're proving that this little... How much was this bike, one of these bikes to buy in Germany, for you?
They've been together, but in a poor condition, we have to say they've been roughly 2,000 euros, which is $3,500, Australian dollars. And then we had, of course, to rebuild it. I've done it by myself, so you have to buy the parts. Let's say it would be around $5,000 Australian, $6,000 Australian to be fully on the road.
With both.
So the beauty, though, is that you can actually buy a reasonably good 125, 250, 500cc Japanese bike, 80s, 90s, for about $5,000.
Yeah.
Put it on the road. And I was telling you off air that I'm in the Classic Car Club here in Armidale, and you can get Classic Car Club if it's 30 years old. Join a club, you meet like-minded people, you get the knowledge from people about how to maintain. You join the club, you can use it for 60 days a year. That's a lot of adventure, particularly if it's weekend adventures. So there's a lot of ways to get into it, but that $5,000 isn't a lot, I don't think. You don't need to spend the $15,000, $20,000 on a huge beast to take you where you want to go.
Exactly. And I think one of the things also is a lot of people think that you can't have fun on 50cc bikes, but really it depends if you pick the right route. And even off-road, the bikes are incredibly, incredibly capable. They're very low, they're very light, like we did the old Tele Trek, some really tough stuff, Gunshot, Palm Creek, crazy river crossings. Yeah, we enjoyed it a lot, every second.
Crocodiles?
We encountered crocodiles up there, but not on the old Teletrack, luckily, because you have to do 20 river crossings, and we drowned the bike as well on one of them, Nolan's Brook, the deepest one. But swimming, no crocodiles.
Very good. Now let's go to the maintenance side. So it's two-stroke, so you have to mix your fuel, because you really can't buy two-stroke anymore. They don't sell two-stroke. So you have to mix it. What's the mixing rate?
It's 1 to 40, 1 to 45, something like that.
Yeah, so not much, a little bit leaner than a chainsaw, which is about 1 in 50.
It sounds at least like a chainsaw. We had people already that said, who on a campground started the chainsaw at 6 o'clock in the morning? But that was us leaving.
So you take your oil with you and you mix your fuel. Have you ever got some bad fuel and your motor is conked out because of bad fuel or bad mixing? Are you pretty right with fuel in Australia?
So far, we had once bad fuel up at the Cape York region where we had a lot of water in the fuel. That was a problem. And you have to make sure to carry enough two-stroke oil, because it's not sure that every roadhouse or gas station has two-stroke oil. Most of them have, and we already used gardening two-stroke oil and our boats two-stroke oil as well. It works fine. They eat everything, but we try to stick to motorcycle two-stroke oil.
So the Kreidler's not very fussy about what it eats?
No, not at all.
So, tyres. What's the tyres? You'd have to have a bit of a off-road or a multi-road type of tyre?
Yeah, we use... it's a bit more of a knobby tyre. It's a Heidenau K46. I'm not sure if people know them over here. They are good for on the road, but they're also good to do tougher stuff, and they suit us very well.
Speed. What sort of speed do you actually keep it on? Because I'm a bit worried about the overheating of a two-stroke, particularly with your loaded... I don't know, people can't see it because it's radio. But if you go to the blog of Time to Ride, you'll see the pictures of these bikes, and they're just fully loaded with gear sacks and packs and all that type of stuff. Everything you own is on these bikes. So there's a fair bit of weight. Not to say that you two are very heavy, but putting all the extra weight on it, how do you go with overheating?
Well, both models, Kreidler back then, they produced air-cooled, proper air-cooled motors, and they've produced fan-cooled motors as well.
So it's fan-cooled. That's pretty revolutionary for a 60, what did you say, 67?
69 and
69?
A
75,
yes.
Yeah, oh, that's pretty damn good. Only in Germany, I suppose.
I don't know.
Those damn Germans. they're always good engineers. Okay, Ty, so what sort of maintenance problems have you run into on this trip, for example, going up to Cape York? I did see a picture of you re-spoking a wheel?
On the rest area, yeah.
Yeah, what was happening there?
Well, I have to say both bikes are capable or allowed to carry 165 kilograms, which is a lot for a 50cc bike. And we have roughly, like I have 80 kilos, the bike, our luggage weighs around 40 to 50 kilos, so we are well below the load limit. But back already at home, we had problems with our spokes, especially I had problems on my bike with the rear wheel. That kept going as well, as you can imagine, tough roads and a lot of luggage here in Australia. And one day I rebuilt the wheel on a rest area because I had 3, 4, 5 broken spokes a day, and I had a couple of spares, but I was running out soon, so I wanted to solve the problem. And the actual problem was that the spokes were not the right ones for this bike. So the Kreidler on the later model, they changed the spokes, the angle of the spokes, and that made it all solve the problem, actually.
So what sort of spares do you take on your bike, and what sort of toolkit? Obviously be a better toolkit than the one that came with the Kreidler, but then again, being German, maybe it was a full toolkit, I'm not sure.
Well, we carry a little bit more tools, of course, so I can do pretty... I couldn't take the engine apart totally, but can do most of the work on the bike anywhere, and we carry like a set of wheel bearings, a set of brake pads, and a couple of minor bits and pieces, spokes as well, so just that we are able on the road to fix whatever turns up.
Are you running tube tires or tubeless tires?
Tube tires, yep.
So have you changed a few tires?
We've changed the tires, but so far we didn't had a flat tire, so
all right, okay.
That was good.
So getting back to the overheating part, so what speed do you try and keep on the road?
Well, we are carrying different sprockets, like small sprockets for the tough stuff to have more power, like when it's getting steep or very sandy. And with this one, we can do maybe 40, 45, and then we carry a big sprocket for the highways. And when it's flat with maybe a little bit of tailwind, we can do 65, 70, which is quite good, actually.
So that's miles or kilometres?
Kilometres.
Oh, very good. Probably all right on the back roads, but on some of the major highways, you're still going to be a bit slow.
Absolutely. We really try to avoid the main highways, because if a road train overtakes you, it's just scary and you're really a travel obstacle. So we try to stick to the backcountry roads, to the gravel roads, and then that's really a lot of fun.
So you take all your stuff with you. You do a lot of camping on the side of the road, or do you go into parking bays, or do you go to motels or camping grounds? Where do you actually stay overnight?
Well, we prefer bush camping. That's just most beautiful, next to a river, in a forest, wherever. And we normally, when we camp, we try to hide, because with the tent, you can't... It's like a little bit of a security thing. In a car or in a caravan, it's maybe different. But we normally try to hide. And then every couple of days, we go to a proper campground if we need to do some washing or recharge all our camera gear.
Shower every month.
I forgot the shower.
Well, I'm glad you showered before you came in, because I can't smell any road or two-stroke fuel. Coffee's a very important thing.
Yes.
Tell me about the coffee.
Well, we do carry a little fuel stove, which comes in quite handy because we always have fuel, of course, and it runs on all sorts of fuel. And we have a little coffee every morning. We carry pots and pans and all sort of stuff, so we are pretty self-sufficient.
Water filter as well, which came in pretty handy at old Teletrack, for example, or right now we've done the old Grafton Road from Grafton up to Gleninnis, and there we camped on a river. And then we can filter our own drinking water out of the river.
Well, there certainly is some nice drives out from Armidale, so nice rides out to Bingra through Baraba, all that sort of thing. So maybe when you are ready to take off that you consider those more western areas, visit some of those western little towns. I know the bakery in Bingra is very good, so you might want to go there. Mm-hmm. And it's on the river, and you can camp on the river for free.
So, sounds beautiful. We have to write this down later on.
Yeah, Bingra. So, you've got time to ride. So, people type in, they could go into YouTube, type in time to ride, all one word. You've got a Facebook, you've got a blog. So, when are you back in Germany?
Good question. Our Australian visa is for 12 months, and afterwards we will see where the adventure leads us.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, we have no flat, no home, no real. So everything that belongs to us is sitting on this bike. And I hope it's still outside there.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe here. I haven't heard the chainsaw start up.
Yeah.
So you're pretty right. You don't have a lot of time on the road to do the content so people can actually go on the adventure with you while they're trying to work out their own adventure. You'll go back to Germany probably and do, or wherever you're going to go and put all this content together. I know you're doing some on the road, but you've probably got a lot more content to put on the Facebook and YouTube.
Well, we try to, like you said, produce everything while we go. Like Facebook, we do almost post every day, and the YouTube videos we try to post maybe once a week. We are not there yet, but we're working on it. And well, afterwards, we really don't know where to go.
So actually, the plan is not really to go right now back, but as long as we enjoy to travel, we're going to tell the stories and keep traveling.
And hopefully people will take a leaf out of your book and go and look at a cheap bike, and $5,000, as I said before, is not a huge expense, and have their little own adventure, and don't think that they're limited in any way by not being able to do something that you guys are doing. So, time to ride, type that in, you'll come to Instagram, YouTube, and blog, and you can follow Bea and Helmut on their trip. This will be a podcast. You'll link to that podcast so people will be able to listen again to this interview. And the blue bike, now I will look at that and see if we might be able to promote that a little bit. Project. I'll find out more about it and we'll do that on air. Thank you very much, Bea and Helmut, for coming in. It's been a pleasure to talk about your adventure, and I wish you all the well and safe and a good journey. And thanks for being on Spotlight.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
And if someone in Armidale hears a chainsaw, that's us. Then give us a wave.
And that's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast.
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.